Oh, we have a new team.
New defendant.
Just on this side.
Yeah, I know. There's a new team on the other side.
Are we ready?
We are. I just have to get a pen. You're ready to go.
Two. I can lend you one.
There we go. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Ben Stone, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Square 2 Financial Corporation.
And you want to reserve?
I will reserve 2 minutes.
All right.
Square 2 Financial Corporation is the parent company of CACH. And like CACH, it too has the right to arbitration of the claims brought by the respondents.
And I guess the dispute is on what grounds?
2 grounds, Your Honor. The first would be as a third-party beneficiary by virtue of the assignment of rights from the bank that issued the credit cards, FIA Services, to CACH. It is a third-party beneficiary under those grounds. In addition, under common law grounds, which are in our brief.
And you're talking about agency principles?
Notably agency principles, which this court has embraced in the McClure versus Davis Wright and Tremaine case, which was a case where this court held that a non-signatory to an arbitration agreement had the right to compel arbitration. And federal courts have held that when you have a close corporate relationship between a signatory to an arbitration agreement and a non-signatory, and you have identical claims being brought against the signatory and against the non-signatory, that non-signatory, along with the close corporate relationship, has the right to compel arbitration.
So here we have no dispute that Two Square is the parent company and there is that relationship.
There is no dispute that Square 2 Financial is the parent corporation of CACH. You're right, Your Honor. And looking at the third-party beneficiary analysis, the question is, under Washington law, did a contracting party intend to assume a direct obligation to a third party? If so, that third party is a beneficiary with the right to enforce the contract. So here we have a couple of questions.
Now, and what is Square 2? I mean, what is the relationship between Square 2 and Cash?
It's the parent corporation.
I know that, but I mean, what Cash is a debt collector.
Debt buyer.
That then collects.
On debts it owns, yes.
Yes. Okay, so what is the role of Square 2?
Square 2 is the parent corporation, and it also is a service provider.
And what does that mean?
It means that it assists CACH with some aspects of the debt collection responsibilities.
So is Square 2 also a debt buyer?
Square 2 is not, to my knowledge.
Would Square 2, under the recent Supreme Court case, also need to be licensed?
No, it would not, Your Honor, because it was not a party to this litigation, the collection litigation. It is a separate company. It was not the collection lawsuits that were brought, which formed the basis of the waiver argument, were brought by CACH. Square 2 Financial Corporation was not a party to that litigation.
But they were acting at the direction of Square 2.
They would, but the question, so it seems like the way I would look at it is, let's say you have a company brings a lawsuit and that company needs to be licensed. Does the president of the company need to be licensed? Do people acting on behalf of the company need to be licensed? The answer would be no. CACH is a corporate entity. Washington law has for a long time recognized that a corporation is a distinct entity from its parents, its subsidiaries, and its officers. And that's the case here.
Is CACH an alter ego of Square 2 or vice versa?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. And I do not believe...
Has that been litigated or raised as an issue?
It has not, and that's an issue that Square 2 would like to address in the arbitration, which is the sole basis of liability that's being asserted against Square 2 is that it's responsible for the actions of CACH. Square 2 disputes that. But Square Two is entitled to have that sent to arbitration.
But for purposes of the argument here, you're saying there is an agency relationship.
What I'm saying here is that Square Two is the parent corporation. And what federal courts have been doing for decades is that they have been taking agency principles and they've applied them to situations where you have a parent company that's a non-signatory to an arbitration agreement that sued the same claims for a subsidiary, where you have plaintiffs that are trying to sidestep their obligation to arbitrate by bringing in the parent corporation, making the same allegations, seeking the same damages, and then saying, we don't have to arbitrate with that parent. We never agreed to that. Federal courts have around the country have rejected that argument, said, no, you can't do that. There is a federal policy that is a liberal policy in favor of arbitration. Cases should be sent to arbitration. And the federal courts have said, we will not allow you.
You think that's what's going on here? You think that the reason that you're being sued is so that if not CACH, then at least your client, Square 2, can be brought into court without going to arbitration?
Exactly. What they're trying to do is...
The effort here.
Exactly. What they're trying to do is split it and drag Square 2 into court based on nothing else than the allegation that it's responsible for CACH's actions, and as a result has to pay the same damages, thereby sidestepping the obligation that they undertook when they agreed to use these credit cards, that they would have to arbitrate disputes on any claims arising out of the use of the credit cards or their accounts. It would completely defeat the purpose of the arbitration clause they agreed to and completely eviscerate the federal policy favoring arbitration. It would be a Pyrrhic victory indeed if CACH was allowed to arbitrate, but Square 2 had to litigate.
Is that the reason for the structure? In other words, is that why Square 2 formed itself and then spun off a child corporation, so to speak, so that you could be in the position to make this argument? Or what is the reason for that?
I don't think Square 2 should be in this lawsuit. I think the allegations that CACH is a shell and that we're the alter ego is meritless. I think that Square 2 doesn't deserve to be in this lawsuit.
CACH has never missed
paying a bill. It is a complete viable entity at solvent.
Yes, but your position is, okay, you shouldn't be in this lawsuit, but you should have the opportunity to go to arbitration and make the arguments that you're just making.
Exactly, Your Honor, which is they can't have their cake and eat it too. They can't say that we're the same company as CACH, but we can't arbitrate when CACH can. They didn't, we're them. That's essentially what they're saying. We're CACH, but no, we have to go litigate while CACH arbitrates.
So to the extent that they are not permitted to arbitrate, then you aren't either.
I would disagree with that, Your Honor, based on two grounds. Third-party beneficiary analysis is distinct. We have that right as a third-party.
What about agency?
Agency, our position is only if CACH has the right to arbitrate, do we have the right to arbitrate. We could see that point.
What about the vacator issue that we've been talking about?
Under the agency, no. Third party, yes. But Square 2 is not a proper party for a vacator action anyway because it never obtained a judgment. And also because there's no establishment. Square 2 is a separate company. There's been no waiver. There's been no prejudice. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Thank you once again. Before I start, I do want to provide the court with a citation regarding the voidness of judgments. Quote, judgment obtained by an unlicensed collection agency is void, end quote. That's Finch versus LVNV Funding, 71 Atlantic 3rd, 193 at 199. That's the Maryland Court of Special Appeals. The lower court decision in Trice had a similar holding. The higher court said, well, it's not exactly void, but the question remains, can it be vacated? I mean, that's really what's before the court. The question,
we wouldn't be able to answer that. I mean, the most
correct.
You would get would be a remand for a court to consider.
Correct. And I'm suggesting that even the question before the lower court on remand would not be, was this void or voidable? The question will be, was there a fraud in the court and should the judgments be vacated? So that would be the question. And I do want to reiterate that the CPA claims spring from the judgments. They do not exist without the underlying.
Well, before you move on, I mean, you say fraud on the court, but that would be under CR 60, right?
No, this would be, well, it could be, but it would be in equity.
Well, if we were to bring you into the modern age, it would be under CR 60.
That's correct. And the question for the court is, how would it fashion that 60 remedy?
Well, first they'd have to decide, the court would have to decide whether there was fraud on the court.
Correct. And we're up on Rule 12. There's been no discovery. The issue has not been litigated. But assuming that
we could recharacterize it as a CR 60. We don't have to stick with your vacator language.
Yeah, I think that's correct. And the question would for the court would be how to fashion a vacation 60 remedy for the entire class of debtors that's been pled. And that would still involve proceeding with the claim as it's currently styled.
Well, not if we disagreed with you about whether there's been waiver as to the CPA and civil conspiracy claims. That may or may not be true.
Correct, yes. The court can hold that there are certain claims that are arbitrable, and
right.
This court could say the damage claims or the civil conspiracy claim, those are arbitrable.
Right.
I would note the difficulty there is there's a class action ban in the arbitration, so those claims would be individually arbitrated.
Right.
Whereas there may be non-arbitrable claims which will proceed on remand, and that would include either the equitable claims or the 60B claims, however the court chooses to characterize those. Turning now to the specific arguments of Square 2, I think I'm going to have to repeat the phrase, have your cake and eat it too. On the one hand, Square 2 wants to benefit solely through its agency relationship with cash from the arbitration clause. But then on the other hand, it wants to ignore its relationship with cash when it comes to whether the arbitration right has been waived. If Square 2 operated solely through cash, which is what the allegations in the complaint are, there is no evidence other than what the allegations in the complaint are on this Rule 12 motion, which is the cash is an alter ego. It has no offices, no employees. It files consolidated tax returns with Square 2. And I should also note, while talking about the fact that Cash is purely a shell corporation, it's simply a holding account for these debts that are purchased, and it's wholly directed by Square 2's employees, officers, and relationships. That's precisely why the Washington legislature passed the Collection Agency Act, which was to make sure that the debt collector had an office, had a phone number, so that consumers and debtors could call the debt collector and try to negotiate their debts. Here, there is no cash. There is no office. And so instead, Square 2 directs cash and directs its team of attorneys who represent cash and other holding companies to file lawsuits, to pursue default judgments, and to institute garnishment proceedings.
Who is it that doesn't have an office? Cash?
Cash. Yeah, cash has nothing. No website, no phone number, nothing. It's a purely shell corporation. Those are the allegations in the complaint. If Square 2 wants to dispute those, it can do those on remand when we do discovery.
Is that the caption of the lawsuit below that resulted in the default judgment, cash versus Wheeze or whatever?
It is, yes. And the
it was cash that got the judgment.
That's correct.
Then there's no dispute about that.
There's no dispute about
that. And so Two Square is not, other than through the corporate structure, is not the holder of the judgment.
Correct. It is not the holder of the judgment. It directs the allegations, unrefuted at this point, are that Square 2 directs all of Cash's actions. So really, it was the actions of Square 2 which affected a waiver. It said it hired attorneys for Cash. It put the lawsuit's name in Cash. It directed the attorneys to pursue litigation of these accounts rather than choosing to arbitrate, which it knew Cash's rights were, or it asserts now its rights were under the arbitration agreements. In terms of the third party.
All right, counsel said that in Square 2's mind, they characterize why you sue them. You sue them because you hoped that even if the court held that Cash had to go to arbitration, the same result wouldn't be true of them and that they would have to go to court for everything.
I wish I was that clever. No, I did not. We did not name Square 2 as a way to try to avoid arbitration by splitting the parties. We sued
Maybe
Square 2.
Maybe you were inadvertently that clever.
Maybe. We sued Square 2 because they're the ones who are controlling this operation, and they're the ones who are benefiting from the shell corporations collecting these debts. They're paid back to Square 2. So it's just a simple problem of from where are we going to have the money disgorged, and we believe it's in Square 2's coffers. It's no longer in Cash's coffers. We would be left with judgments or the vacation of judgments, but no ability to return the money to the debtors because Cash has given it to Square 2. So that was the real reason, was to bring in the parent company who really has control over these operations. And since we don't know exactly where the money is, what the exact split was, it would be something we'd have to find out in discovery. In terms of the third-party beneficiary...
Which you haven't had yet.
Which we have not. No, this is a Rule 12 motion with a couple of affidavits that... I think all they did basically was authenticate the arbitration agreement. But no, there has been no discovery in this case.
How many judgments are there?
Total? Against all members of the proposed class? We don't know, but it would be in the hundreds or thousands. We have two lead plaintiffs in this case who each have their own
judgment. Are they all in Washington or are they all over the place?
Well, the class here is defined simply as Washington because the Washington Collection Act will control the rights and remedies as between the creditor and the debtors here. But we believe this is it's a very large nationwide operation, purchasing charged-off credit card debts, cents on the dollar, from, in this case, Bank of America, large credit card holding companies.
Now, the ruling in the, I guess it's the Suttle case, is that, that's the
correct
ruling
that the gray
says
case,
that you have to have a license. What is, conceptually, policy-wise, what is the reason for that particular statutory requirement? What is it, what's important to the legislature that about having a license as a debt collector?
Yeah, well, I think two things. One, which I've touched on, the other, which I haven't. The first, I think, is so that the legislature and the Attorney General can regulate debt collectors and to ensure that there are not going to be unsavory debt collection practices, that if you're registered, then your registration can be pulled. There's now an enforcement mechanism for bad conduct, for bad actors. And if you have to meet some sort of requirement or some obligation of good behavior, then you get your license. The other...
Having an office and a phone number.
That's the second part, which is what I think I've touched on, which is that so that there's a real mechanism for debtors who are financially struggling to have someone they can contact, the debt collector, before they get sued, before there's a judgment against them, before their credit is being destroyed in the future, that they can go and try to work out a payment plan, a reduction of the debt, a cash payoff, something. But in the absence of meeting the requirements of the statute, which is in order to be registered, you have to have all of these things, there's no one there on the other line to call up and ask for help.
Is Washington unusual among states in having this form of regulation?
It is not, no. I think these are increasingly common. They're in at least six states that I can think of off the top of my head. There are different, but most of them are modeled on the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, the Federal Act, and its definition of who is a debt collector. In this case, the Washington statute is a little bit different because the definition is a collection agency, which has not been litigated or briefed, but I would suggest collection agency is a little bit broader in terms of who has to be registered. And really, that's what the Gray case speaks to. One of the arguments...
Sattel was a defendant in this case, or is still the lawyer?
The law firm was an original name defendant. Justice Yu granted the motion to compel arbitration, and that's where that defendant is.
So that lawsuit, I mean, in other words, this case is in front of us only because a denied motion to compel arbitration is an appealable order.
That's correct. And I should note on the res judicata, I'm not certain that there is interlocutory appellate review of a Rule 12, the denial of a Rule 12 motion premised on res judicata. So that may not be before you really at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I just have 2 minutes, Your Honor. Thank you. Going back to a question I think that one of you asked was, well, what does a service provider do? CACH actually, the plaintiff actually alleged what a service provider did or what Square 2 Financial did, and that would be on page 10 of the clerk's papers. So the court can find that answer right there. And when you look at the arbitration clause agreed to by the respondents when they use their credit cards, it allows not only for parent companies, and that was important, I believe, to FIA services when it had that arbitration clause, was to include not only itself in the arbitration provision, but all of its related entities, just to avoid something like this from occurring, which is that the whole interest in having this arbitrated gets defeated because whoever the card users are, or the plaintiffs are, they just pick out related entities and thereby assert the same exact claims, defeating the whole arbitration clause. And that's why Square 2, as the parent of CACH, who's, when you have the assignment, you have the standing in the shoes. So you have CACH stands in the shoes of FIA, and then you have to have Square 2 stand in the shoes of FIA's parent. Otherwise, you turn the assignment law on its head. So there you've got this interest and agreement that there's going to be arbitration not only with signatories and assigns, but parents as well. And that also I would just reiterate one more time that because Square 2 was not in the underlying litigation, there is no prejudice to the respondents if they're required to arbitrate the claims that they're asserting, which Mr. Lugano was going in depth about whether it's liable. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, that concludes our docket for the day. The court will be at recess.
All rise.